Dr. David Hanscom defines chronic pain and discusses the physiological and environmental origins of chronic pain. He talks about how to deal with chronic illnesses such as diabetes using neurological and anti-inflammatory tools. Tune in to learn about how people can pursue dynamic healing as an alternative to mainstream chronic pain management.
Podcasting from Dallas, Texas, I am Shireen, and this is the Yumlish Podcast. Yumlish is working to empower you to take charge of your health through diet and exercise and reduce the risk of chronic conditions like type 2 diabetes and heart disease. We hope to share a unique perspective and a culturally relevant approach to managing these chronic conditions with you each week.
Dr. David Hanscom practiced complex orthopedic spine surgery for 32 years. He quit his practice in Seattle, Washington, to present his insights into solving chronic pain, which evolved from his own 15-year battle with it. He eventually escaped from the ordeal and discovered that mental pain is really the biggest issue. Anxiety is the pain. Welcome, Dr. Hanscom.
Thank you, Shireen. I'm very happy to be here.
An absolute pleasure having you on. I want to start out by asking you a little bit more about your orthopedic surgery practice, sort of your focus there. And then if you can tell me a little bit about what we read at the end of your bio with anxiety is the pain. Can you walk us through that?
Well, my journey's been very humbling. I went to a very high-level spine fellowship back in 1985-86. And I was one of the surgeons who came out with a zeal to do surgery on everybody I could do surgery on. I was a surgeon. I actually felt guilty if I couldn't do surgery. And then the data came out in about seven years into my practice, that the success rate of a back fusion for back pain was 22%. And I just stopped. I thought it was 90%. The data wasn't really there yet. So I just stopped. But after that point, spine surgery has gone through the ceiling. There's almost $20 billion a year of spine surgery to be done right now based on a surgery that doesn't work. So I stopped doing spine surgery. I did not know it happened to me, but I went into chronic pain myself. So I went from being this fearless major spine surgeon, doing lots of scoliosis, lots of complex infected spines, 8, 10, 12-hour surgeries. And so I kept doing that part of my practice, but I stopped doing fusions for back pain. So around that time, I developed chronic pain myself, and that included crippling anxiety. And I thought anxiety was a psychological issue, and I got help. And the harder I tried to solve this anxiety thing, the worse it got. But I went from being a fearless major spine surgeon to crippling anxiety. And I was still able to perform spine surgery and do my practice, but my personal life was just a disaster. And so I came out of it somewhat by accident in 2003. And I didn't know it. I still didn't know what happened to me, how I got into this, how I came out of it. And in addition to the anxiety, I had another 16 different physical symptoms. My ears were ringing, migraine headaches, my feet were burning, skin rashes were popping up over my whole body. Of course, I saw all sorts of medical care and nobody could tell me what was going on. So when I came out of it, I was equally as perplexed because I have no symptoms and I don't have anxiety. And so it turns out that the bottom line of all these symptoms is that anxiety is not psychological. It's just a word that describes your body's chemical state when you're under stress. And what got me in deep trouble is that spine surgery is tough, really tough. And our badge of honor is being really tough. And my way I coped with anxiety historically was bring it on. And I actually prided myself of taking on an indefinite amount of stress. But the problem is that stress takes a toll. And people think stress is psychological, but what happens when you're threatened, when any living creature is threatened, your body responds with a fight or flight response. That sensation is anxiety. And when you suppress it, it's even worse. So it got me into trouble as I suppressed everything. And it's being a spine surgeon is a little insane. And you just bring it on. So what happened I was 37 years old. I went from being, honestly, I didn't know what anxiety was, to a panic attack in one day. And from that point on, for the next 15 years, I was just a miserable, miserable human being.
And when that did happen for you, I mean, what was the path? What was the journey? How did it look?
So what happened, I thought my anxiety is psychological. So I went through all sorts of counseling and talked to different people. And what I didn't understand, anxiety is generated out of the unconscious brain. And so the more I talked about it from a neurological standpoint, I was putting more attention on the problem. And so I was reinforcing these circuits. And so anxiety and anger are survival reactions, is part of the unconscious brain, which processes about 20 million bits of information per second. The conscious brain processes 40. So my mind over matter, of course, didn't work. And so by the time I got to 1997 or so, this is about 10 years into this whole process, I developed what was called an obsessive compulsive disorder, which is the ultimate anxiety disorder. And that lasted for 7 years. And I was totally beside myself. So I was still practicing. Again, my personal life was falling apart very quickly. So I could function in a structured situation, but I couldn't function out of the structured situation. So what happened around 2003 is I picked up a book called Feeling Good by David Burns. And David Burns said to do this writing exercises. And I thought it was his book, which partially it was. It's a great book. But it turns out that this thing called expressive writing has over 1,200 research papers documenting that it does all sorts of stuff. So it decreases viral load in HIV. It improves kidney functions, liver function, improves wound healing, drops down anxiety, depression, improves school performance. I mean, it's unbelievable what this thing does. There's over 1,200 references documenting that expressive writing works, but I didn't know that at the time. So I just started to write. Within 2 weeks, after 15 years of being absolute misery, things started to change. My mood was better. These crazy thoughts started to disappear. And at 6 weeks, I was quite a bit better. And 6 months later, I had lots of personal stresses that were pretty horrendous. And I was angry, but I didn't know it. You know, these stresses became so high that I just sort of exploded. And I didn't process my anger very well. But within 6 weeks after I went through that gauntlet, which took about 6 weeks, my symptoms started to disappear. And they're gone. My ears don't ring. My migraines are gone. My feet don't burn. I don't have any of those symptoms. And it turns out this thing we call anxiety is just a word that describes our body's chemistry. It's a result of stresses, not the cause. So as I went back to my practice, as I started talking to people, I would do these workups. Sometimes I would see an anatomical problem. Sometimes I wouldn't. But I remember one 2 week period, I had four gentlemen, all ages between 45 to 60, all extremely successful. And they had surgical lesions. They needed surgery, I thought. But I talked to them and I looked at their spine questionnaire, and every one of them had a 10 out of 10 on anxiety, depression, and irritability. So I started asking a simple question, well, what's going on? Well, there's loss of a job, a daughter sick with leukemia, business deal has gone bad, relationships going sour. And when we started applying the principles of simply learning to regulate your body's chemistry, calm things down, all of their symptoms disappeared. But I asked them the question in the office. I said, look, if I could do surgery to get rid of your leg pain, they all had leg pain, they all had bone spurs, or you had to live with anxiety the rest of your life, what would you choose? Every one of them thought out and said, I can't deal with the anxiety. They started asking that question more and more and more. And it comes to find out that people can sort of deal with physical pain in a way, but this mental pain, the relentless anxiety just drives people, you're trapped. So that was a huge insight for me. I go, wait a second. So then about 2 weeks later, I had two people flying from New York to Seattle to come see me. Both had had two spine surgeries. And I looked at their scans and tried to figure things out. And I had the same conversation. And they both had the same thing. It was the anxiety. And as their anxiety dropped down, in other words, they normalized their body's chemistry, the symptoms disappeared. These were with surgical lesions, identifiable bone spurs. Then I started doing this process before every patient I did surgery on. The last 8 years of my practice, I would have people work on all the things that affect pain. I called it prehab, rehab before surgery. And out of over 100 patients was very significant bone spurs, pinched nerves, matching symptoms that would have done well with surgery. But as we calmed them down, their symptoms disappeared. So I sort of started putting myself out of business because at the end of my practice, I was operating on 4.6% of my patients. And normally a surgeon operates at least on 10%, maybe 20 or 30% sometimes. Now it's down to under 5%. And so with elective surgery, there's a thing called prehab, where the data says to get people sleeping, deal with anxiety, stress, physical conditioning, stabilize medications. Sleep is huge. And as we just did with the data said, people's symptoms disappeared. Or if we did the surgery, the results are pretty consistently spectacular, really nice. Then I found out about 3 years ago that the data also says you can do the perfect operation in the perfect patient, but if they have untreated chronic pain, i.e. anxiety, you can make the pain worse 40 to 60% of the time with the perfect operation. So it turns out that chronic pain from any part of the body, whether it's mental pain or physical pain, gets memorized by the brain in about 6 to 12 months. Then it doesn't matter what you do surgically at that point.
And so, Dr. Hanscom, what you're saying then is that in what you saw, at least on the orthopedic side, you saw that a lot of this pain was sort of rooted in anxiety and stressors. Can you speak a little bit more to those stressors, environmental factors that sort of led to, that leads to that pain, or what you saw?
So the basic model of treating chronic disease is that your body can be either, just think about your body's chemistry. So you can feel safe and content, which is oxytocin, dopamine, serotonin, all these great drugs, and what's called anti-inflammatory cytokines. Or your body can be in fight or flight, which is adrenaline, cortisol, inflammatory cytokines, and it fires your body up. You actually change your neurotransmitters from calming to excitatory. So what happens, you can be either safety or threat. What you're trying to do is you're trying to minimize your time in what I call threat physiology. Because if you're in fight or flight, you can't heal. So the essence of disease is sustained exposure to fight or flight. So when you have sustained stresses, then your body's going to be in fight or flight, and it's a big problem. But here's the challenging part. Avoiding stress is a problem. And the stress that's the most stressful is the stress that you can't control. So the idea of stress management is somewhat of a misnomer. In fact, it is a misnomer. So the three parts of healing are you have your stresses or your circumstances. Then you have your nervous system, which processes your environment. And we tend to think stress is psychological, but it's not. It's just your It can be physical threats, mental threats, it doesn't matter. We do know that if you have a mental threat, that it goes to the same part of your brain as a physical threat, you have the same chemical reaction. The problem with humans is that we cannot escape our consciousness. So things could be doing really nicely, taking a nice walk, and you're thinking about your boss who yelled at you. Well, your body's in fight or flight. So the key issue is that you have your stresses coming in. And then when your stresses overwhelm your coping skills, you go into threat physiology, right? So too much stress, your brain can't handle it, and your body goes into a fight or flight mode. And when it's sustained, the data is very clear that stress kills people. And people go, well, that's crazy. Well, it's not crazy, because what happens if you're sustained fight or flight is like driving your car down the freeway in second gear. It's going to break down, and your body breaks down. And you develop all sorts of physical symptoms and mental, because your whole body's system is fired up. And what I didn't remember until a couple of years ago, this is a whole different story, is that under fight or flight, it fires up your immune system. And so your immune system starts attacking your own body. So it turns out that anxiety, depression, bipolar, OCD are all inflammatory disorders. And your body's inflamed. So anxiety is really physiological. And then things like Parkinson's, Alzheimer's, cardiovascular disease, peripheral vascular disease, hypertension, adult onset diabetes are all inflammatory disorders. So for chronic disease, both mental and physical, it's all the same thing. So with the stresses, you learn how to process the stress differently, so it has less impact on your nervous system. So there's ways of understanding what my friend Bruce Lipton calls stupid stress. We get worried about things we have no control over. So there's ways of actually separating from that. The expressive writing, it separates you from your racing thoughts. And people forget you can try to outrun your stresses, but you can't outrun your mind. So the worst stress, by the way, are unpleasant, repetitive thoughts. That's what drives people. I mean, if you start talking to people more closely, we have lots of sensory input, and we can calm things down a lot, but we still have these crazy thoughts in our head, self-esteem issues, et cetera, that torture us. I mean, life can be physically perfect, but these thoughts keep coming into our consciousness. But what happens, they create a fight or flight physiology. So as your fight or flight physiology is up, your brain gets inflamed and the thoughts get worse. It's a horrible little cycle.
So that's interesting. For the individuals who are listening to this podcast here today, can you help us understand how can they, sort of living with chronic illness, chronic pain, really transform their lives by tapping into their own sort of dynamic healing potential, calming their nervous system? How can they get back in control?
So what happened? That's why I quit my practice eventually, because I was realizing that we were doing spine surgery on anxiety. And as we calm people down, the pain would go away. So I ended up, it was so hard to explain this in the office. I finally wrote a book called Back in Control, A Surgeon's Roadmap Out of Chronic Pain. The second edition was published in 2016. And it gives people a framework to understand the whole process. So we just barely touched on it today, but it's actually not hard to understand. It doesn't take that much time. And then last year, I've essentially rewritten my book in a way, and I put out what's called the DOC journey, the Direct Your Own Care journey. And it's a sequence that starts with some basic things to calm things down, just to calm down. I mean, the essence of the solution is you want to minimize your time in fight or flight. And so all these tools, each one of them goes into the circumstances, goes to the state of your nervous system, goes directly to the physiology. So you can intervene at all three points with very specific tools. But what happens with the doc journey is that it starts with people's skepticism. They go, well, why am I going to try this? I tried everything else. Nothing else has worked. Well, again, you have to have the paradigm or the treatment model correct before it's going to work. So you keep trying the same thing over and over again that doesn't even address the problem, which pain is a neurological issue, not psychological. And as you start to address the positive physiology, these tools actually work beautifully. So sequence is you start with your disbelief. There's expressive writing. There's some relaxation tools that actually directly stimulate the vagus nerve, which is anti-inflammatory. Sleep, number one. Sleep is, there's more of a chance of going, so a lack of sleep actually causes back pain. There's actually a higher correlation of disability with lack of sleep than there is with pain. And so sleep's a big one. And then the final one is on this first leg of the journey, which people just think I'm out of my mind. But what you're doing with your brain, you're developing a new nervous system within the old one. It's called neuroplasticity. And your brain's going to develop where you replace your attention. So one of the rules we have that's been incredibly powerful is people simply cannot discuss their pain. And because where's your attention? So you can't discuss your pain or medical care, no complaining, no giving unasked for advice, no criticism, because what's that doing to your nervous system? And so as you honestly program your brain sort of to be nice, your body chemistry changes from threat to safety. And then the ultimate answer to chronic pain, and you have to do this in a sequence, is play, giving back, life perspective, et cetera. And of course, I know your world is full, is focused on dietary issues a lot. And so I do want to, I know we're running out of time here, but I do want to focus on that just for a second. You have the input, your nervous system, and the output. And if your nervous system is hyperactive, it takes less stress to set off the fight or flight response, right? So what happens if your brain's already inflamed, it's a problem. So we know exercise and sleep both decrease the sensitivity of the nervous system, but so does diet. As you go anti-inflammatory diet, remember anxiety is inflammatory. All these other chronic diseases are inflammatory. So people go diet, yeah, whatever. So including myself, I'm a surgeon. We don't believe in diet. I do now. And I'm embarrassed that I didn't pay more attention to this earlier. But if you have an inflammatory diet, you can do all these other things. And I mean, if anti-inflammatory diet by itself is not going to solve the problem, just like nothing by itself is going to solve the problem because chronic pain is complex. But you know, if you're eating a really bad diet, forget about the weight, just the diet itself, high processed foods, it's going to inflame your nervous system. It's going to inflame everything. So the key issue is you have to address all the issues, and diet, sleep, exercise are right in the middle of it. And you refer this your whole life, but it really helps people understand as you do these things, you're stimulating the vagus nerve, which is anti-inflammatory. As you drop down your inflammatory markers, your anxiety drops and the pain drops. The pain goes away.
I like the way you're putting it. So essentially what you're saying is what we're constantly hearing, is work on the diet, work on the sleep, work on all of these elements, because there's a holistic approach in what you're saying, and the impact from that is on all of these different stressors, which then impacts sort of that chronic pain, right? So it's that ripple effect. So if you can sort of take care of all of these environmental, personal, all of these different factors, you can then solve eventually that chronic pain, right?
Correct.
The other part of this then becomes, Dr. Hanscom, I'm not sure how else to put it, but is it really that simple, right? Especially when you've got things like genetic factors, right? When you talk about, okay, there's only so much in my control, but then there's genetics, there is all of these other things. What would you say to that, to all these other elements that are in play that are not in our control?
So you cannot control the vast majority of everything, but you can control your response. So remember, stress isn't the problem, it's a chemical reaction to stress. And I just talked to Bruce Lipton last week, who's a friend of mine, and he's extremely hyper about that phrase about genetics being a problem. We are not at the mercy of our genetics. Our environment goes to the genetics that gets expressed. Just because you have a breast cancer gene does not mean you're going to get breast cancer. So again, under stress, changing your body's chemistry, is a much higher chance that your resistance is down and you'll have cancer. It's a real debate about the link between stress and cancer, but there's a clear link between stress and chronic disease of all sorts. Any chronic disease is chronic stress. So that's the key issue, is that you can't control most of your stresses, but you have a complete say over the reaction. And I call it the eye of the storm, where if you think about the wind represented in your circumstances that you can't control, and your racing thoughts that you can't control, what happens is the tools just pull you into the center. As you quit fighting things that you can't control, then you have much more energy to deal with what you want to deal with. See, the problem in chronic pain in general is that we're always trying to fix ourselves, right? Our brain is focused on the problem, not the solution. So the way the process works, and it's not just my process, in principle, anxiety and frustration and anxiety, anger, and frustration are all reactions from the past. So as those reactions come into the present moment, the tools simply separate you from the past, not solve it, not fix it, not trying to allay it. Then the quote work, this is why this is disturbingly simple, is because the tools to negate these obsessive circuit patterns are very simple. They're not hard at all. Then you can giving back, play, friends, family, do things that you enjoy. So visualizing the life you want is really critical to pursue that. And that's how the solution to chronic pain is actually develop this new nervous system. So you move away from chronic pain. It's like any musical instrument that you don't play for 30 years, it's going to atrophy. But if you pick it up and move forward, we have play circuits in our brain. We know how to give back. We know how to be with people. That is genetically hardwired. So this part, the anxiety, frustration, is the unconscious brain. As my friend Bruce Lipton says really clearly, it's a hard drive. You must be talking to a machine. It's not going to respond to your entreaties. So, but what does respond is this developing your consciousness that you want. What do you want your life to look at? But you can't do that if you're fighting anxiety and frustration. So it's a separation, then moving forward. And if you want to call learning how to play, giving back work, you can call it that. But it's fun. So it's not, so it is. So the answer is, what I think makes me so frustrated is that spine surgery is complicated. The downside of a failed spine surgery is horrible. And these tools and the solution just is disturbingly simple. And we have hundreds and hundreds of patients that just are living a life they never knew was possible. They not only break free from pain, but as they expand their life into this new reality, they're so excited because your brain is physically changing that direction. And once you hit a certain tipping point, you'll fall back a lot, but you have the tools to get out. And people actually can't turn back because they own it from day one. So it's you've changed the way you process life, your brain starts to structurally change, And people's, I have one gentleman, 28 surgeries in 22 years. He's 67 years old. He says he has never felt better in his life, ever, even before the chronic pain started. And again, there's a bit of a story behind that, as you can imagine, but I did not think that was possible. So I'm convinced you can program your brain around essentially anything.
And this is, I guess, even on the flip side of it, it's putting a lot of onus on the individual to make change, right? Or if you look at any kind of surgery, I mean, even not maybe spine surgery, but if you look at it, it's like, well, there's the answer, it's a quick fix, it's a surgery, and it's done. But what you're saying is that it doesn't need to go that far. You don't need to get as invasive in the approach. There's a lot that can be done that the individual can do in their own life to sort of manage that pain and work around it.
Well, I mean, spine surgery is a big deal. It's not a quick fix. It's months of suffering, and then you're worse afterwards with a 20% success rate. So this actually is a quick fix. Within 2 to 4 weeks after people start learning to calm the nervous system down, in other words, we're not fixing your pain. We're giving you tools to allow it to fix yourself. So it's 100% on you. And the problem is when you're angry and in pain and trapped, you tend to blame people around you, right? So you're sort of used to not taking responsibility, including myself. So I don't want to sound lecturing here. So there's nobody better than a surgeon for blaming people for anything. That's what we do. But in pain, same thing. People blame everything. So that is the biggest block, by the way, to healing, is actually saying, okay, I can do this. I'm taking responsibility. Once people do that, it's just game on.
Mm-hmm. Before I let you go, Dr. Hanscom, I have to ask. So with Yemlish, we work a lot with people who have, diabetes or pre-diabetes. What 1 to 2 things would you tell someone who is trying to deal with that, trying to figure that out, in addition to what you've already mentioned? What suggestions can you provide to our listeners who are dealing with some of that, and where they can, again, take ownership of their health?
Yeah, it's a little tricky because all of us tend to say, well, I'm going to try this diet or try exercise and et cetera, et cetera. And again, the key issue here is it's always a combination approach. And so the first thing we have people do is sort of calm down with breathing exercises, et cetera, because what happens when you're upset and in fight or flight, your blood supply to the brain changes. You go from the thinking center to the survival centers, and you can't think clearly. So learning just calming techniques to start rationalizing things better. And we're looking at behavioral changes. And so when you're not taking care of your health as well as you should, then why is that? You're so busy trying to survive, you don't know how to take care of yourself anymore. So I would encourage you to learn the tools to just negate these circuits from the past and learn the tools to move forward. And it's like learning how to become a golfer. It takes lessons and reading books and actually practicing. So as you practice the skills to learn how to regulate your body's chemistry, you have control. And that eventually includes your diet, et cetera. So that's where the sequence is so critical, to sort of get calmed down enough, understand the problem. Then again, the solution is what I call disturbingly simple. And all of us have, this is an entirely different conversation, but it turns out the more resolute you are in your resolutions to get better and do better, the lower the chance you're actually going to do it. Because the mind over matter doesn't work. So you're looking to actually change the structure of your brain. And so you can force yourself to sort of become better for 6 months, a year at the most. Then your conscious mind just sort of wears out. It goes back to the old patterns. So this is actually changing the structure of your brain. You're changing the filter. Once you've changed the filter where you look at life in general, your brain keeps changing. So maybe for the first month or two with your type of program, you get started, do well, then you start falling off and you give up. So you want to change a filter to learn the skills that you can move forward indefinitely, and people do. And so again, it's about behavioral changes, and all of us want to be healthier. We don't do it as much as we should, right? Because it's behaviors.
So it starts by taking a long, hard look at those behaviors and understanding why the change is important.
Right.
Perfect. Dr. Hanscom, with that, we're toward the end of the episode. Before I let you go, I would love for listeners to learn more about how they can connect with you and learn more about your work.
Yeah. So I have a book called Back in Control, A Surgeon's Roadmap Out of Chronic Pain. And for those of you that have back pain or considering surgery, I quit my practice to do this 2.5 years ago. It's called Do You Really Need Spine Surgery? And it's a quick read and just clarifies the decision-making really easily into two factors, the anatomy and the nervous system. And then the most recent thing that we have out, which is happening now, is called the DOC Journey. So direct your own care journey that can be accessed through the docjourney.com. And that's the sequence I'm telling you about starting slowly, letting your brain build and change. And so it's been really delightful watching people more consistently get better more quickly. And the one factor that determines success is whether you're willing to engage and learn the tools. So again, my excitement is watching people's anxiety drop. Once the anxiety drops, the pain, physical pain also drops. Then all of a sudden they start creating these lives that are fantastic and they're so excited. And I would come out of my long clinics every day just totally fired up because there's so many successes. People are so excited. So yeah, it's a very self-directed process. And then you and I have talked before that if you have a chance to do it in conjunction with what you're doing, which is more focused on a specific part of the problem, remember this whole problem is complicated. So, you know, the diet stuff is extremely helpful. And then you add these other layers in around it, not very hard. We recommend maybe 15 to 30 minutes a day at the most looking at this stuff. And so, yeah, that's where I am.
Lovely. We'll find you there. And to our listeners out there who are listening to this episode, head over to our social media after this episode and let us know, what is the one step you are taking to treat your chronic pain? Head over to our Facebook. Let us know there, what is that one step that you are taking to treat your chronic pain? And with that, Dr. Hanscom, thank you so very much for your time. It was an absolute pleasure having you on.
Yeah, thank you. I totally enjoyed it.
Thank you for listening to the Yumlish podcast. Make sure to follow us on social media at Yumlish_ on Instagram and Twitter, and at Yumlish on Facebook and LinkedIn for tips about managing your diabetes and other chronic conditions, and to chat and connect with us about your journey and perspective. You can also visit our website, yumlish.com, for more recipes, advice, and to get involved with all of the exciting opportunities Yumlish has to offer. If you like this week's show, make sure to subscribe so you can hear more from us every time we post. Thank you again, and we'll see you next time. Remember, your health always comes first. Stay well.